It is November 7th of 2014. My name is Jeff Martinek, and I'm the archivist for the PA History Society. And today we're conducting a telephonic interview with Dr. Reginald Carter and Dr. Jeff Heinrich. Reg is with us here today in Johns Creek, Georgia, at the PA History Office, which is also the joint office of the National Commission on Certification of Physician Assistants, as well as the ARC-PA. And Jeff Heinrich is joining us from his home in Guilford, Connecticut. How are you doing this morning, gentlemen?
Very good.
Great.
Fine.
Great. So let's talk about the PA History Society. Reginald, you are the founder of the History Society, and Jeff, you were the first president. So, Jeff, when and how did you become interested in preserving the history of the PA profession?
Let me first start by giving you some background information about myself and how I became involved in archiving. I graduated from the Duke University PA program in August of 1973. I started working in plastic surgery at Yale University that same year. A common thread in my 25-year clinical life was caring for patients who had sustained burn injuries. As a result, I became a member of the American Burn Association, commonly known as the ABA, starting in 1973. I served on several different committees over the years. I served on the ABA Board of Trustees from 1987 to 1990, and as a board member, I developed the first guide to operations by reviewing the minutes of the Board of Trustees meetings from 1968 to 1990, one element of the history of the American Burn Association. Fun part about that job was that the board didn't want to call it a policy manual. That's why they named it a guide to operations. That led me to become a member of the ABA Archives Committee starting in 1990. As a result, I worked with the established ABA Archives at the National Library of Medicine in Bethesda, Maryland, and actively added materials to the collection. I did videotape interviews of all the past presidents of the ABA, which became a part of the archives. I took highlights of the interviews and created a video loop that was put on display at one of the annual meetings of the association. I did three additional historical displays. And then I thought to myself, why are we doing this for the PA profession? Both organizations were started around the same time in the late 60s, and it just seemed silly not to to proceed and do something with the PA profession.
So Reg, how about the same question for you?
Well, interesting. I started out at Duke in 1970 as a research fellow, but by 1972 I was asked to teach PAs, physician assistants, who were then located over in the Department of Community Health Sciences under Dr. Harvey Estes. I went over and started teaching physiology to these PA students, who at that time were mostly military corpsmen still, and just fell in love with the students. They were highly motivated. And within a year, the associate director, Dave Lewis, and the director, Bob Howard, both left to go to Florida. And Harvey Estes called me over to give me the opportunity to become the associate director at that time. So that's how I got involved with the PA program at Duke in 1972, first teaching physiology and then becoming the associate director. When I joined the staff there, the first thing I did was pull all the old records and files and read all the grants that had been written up to that time, to give me some background and feel for the program. And as I was doing that, I thought, if this thing really flies and becomes a profession that we think it might become, these files are going to be very important. At the same time, in the Department of Community Health Sciences, we had historians. One of them was Jim Guilford, who later became the first archivist at within the medical center at Duke. So Jim and I had formed a close relationship, and just as soon as he became the archivist, we shipped over probably 10 or 12 boxes of materials that had accumulated there within the PA program, and started making sure that those records were, you know, going to stay around for a while. The other thing Jim and I did, we wrote a number of chapters for some books, basically about the history and evolution of the profession. We also got a small grant and actually did a videotape about the history of the profession and so forth. So by the 77 or 78, I had already gotten involved a good bit in trying to archive and save the materials, at least that we had at Duke. Then the 25th anniversary of the program came about, and I thought that would be a great time to do audio histories on all the early faculty. So I sent questions out with video tapes and had people self-audio of their remembrances about being on the early faculty at Duke. So we did that for the 25th anniversary, and we actually videoed, taped the early faculty when they came for that meeting. In the by the 1994, something around there, there were a number of books coming out. I think the Ballwig book came out, and it had a chapter on history that I thought was well done. And then Hooker and Colley came out with their book with another chapter on the history. So by the end of the 1990s, people were beginning to think about history. But the interesting thing about what those two chapters presented was based mostly on published articles and not very much on primary source material. And I knew as a developing historian that primary source material was what you needed to really write the history of a profession. So going into 2000, I was already thinking that we need to do something not only to preserve the history at Duke, but we needed to preserve the history at MedEx and all throughout the whole United States.
Yeah, all of the founding.
Right.
Right. So Jeff, when you began raising concerns about the loss of this kind of important historic material, what was the reaction you received from the people you spoke to about that? And you know, what steps were then taken to eventually assure that these materials would be kept and stored appropriately?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, in 1995, I thought we should establish an archive for the profession, and I was thinking that we could do that actually at the National Library of Medicine. So I asked my PA colleague at Yale, Bruce Bitch-Handler, who is on the AAPA Board of Directors, to ask the board if it would be possible to establish an archives committee. And to my great surprise, they were not interested and wouldn't accept it. So we waited a year, and with new leadership in 1996, Bruce brought the idea back to the Academy Board, and they thought it was a great idea, and it moved on from there, and I became the first archivist. Huh. Lynn Caton, who's from Oregon, was the Academy president at the time. So every time I see him, I pat him on the back and thank him for his vision. It was at the 1996 annual PA meeting in New York City where I first discussed the archives with Reg. He brought up the idea of digitalizing the collection. We had a very nice conversation. I was quite excited about his idea. Unfortunately, we both had very busy schedules on the home front, so it took a few years for us to get together to pursue our mutual interest. In 1997, the AAPA Board of Directors budgeted $10,000 for the History Project and assigned Academy staff member Kevin Bays to work with me. Kevin and I made contact with several of the past leaders of the profession to start to secure old records and photographs. We also identified an area in the national office to house our materials. In May of 1998, life changed for me. I left my position at Yale as a surgical PA to be the program director at the George Washington University PA program in Washington, D.C. The good news is the close proximity with the PA national office in Alexandria, Virginia, made it easier for me to meet with Kevin and continue our work. While meeting one weekend, we randomly found the original paperwork of the incorporation of the APA in North Carolina in 1968. Where was it? It was in a dusty cabinet in the main conference room. We were shocked, quite frankly, that such an important piece of the Academy history was not being safeguarded. Kevin and I established the PA Archives Collection at the National Library of Medicine and placed a small amount of material from the American Registry of PAs in the collection. The registry was similar to an era where PAs were able to register, and it was in line with what was going to happen with the National Commission, but on a much smaller scale. And with the formation of the National Commission on Certification of PAs in 1974, the registry was disbanded. I saw in your most recent issue of the Society newsletter that Tom Pym had a very nice article in there outlining the history of the National Commission.
Yeah, it's coming up on 40 years, so.
Amazing.
There we are, yeah. So, Reg, what events led you to propose the establishment of a PA history office within the Department of Community and Family Medicine? Like, how did you go about getting funding and support for something that big?
Well, it's kind of interesting. As I was now moving towards retirement, timing always is important. As Jeff just alluded to, being a program director, division chief, takes an enormous amount of time. I had already decided I was going to step down, retire at age 62, and probably give up any administrative or major administrative duties by age 60. Dr. Stead, one of my mentors at Duke, had done that in the Department of Medicine, stepped down as chairman at age 60, and I always thought that was a good thing to do. Let younger people take control. And the other thing, I wanted to have some fun in the last days at Duke. And so Jeff and I and a number of other people have been talking about the real need to preserve the history, that people were getting older, they were going to be dying out. If we didn't get the oral histories now, we would never get them. So I did feel some urgency in getting this done. I talked to the department chairman at that time, was Lloyd Michener, about my plans. Justine Strand had just come on as the division chief. I'd stepped down from that role, stayed on as program director, and then eventually started this office for the preservation of PA history at Duke, with the idea that it would be a digital collection as much of anything. So I had this concept in mind. Everyone was very supportive. Dr. Stead had just given us $55,000 to do with whatever we wanted to do. I spoke to him about the idea of a PA history office. He agreed to let the money go that way. I talked to individuals at the Academy, the Association, the National Commission, some other benefactors, close friends, and during the 6 months prior to establishing the office in July of 2001, I had pulled together enough money to at least get us through 1 year. So stepping out on faith, and that's basically what it was, we started the PA history office there within the department. One of the first things I did was write an article that we put into the at that time, I think it's called Perspectives on PA Education, the journal of what is now the PAEA, and basically outlined our plans for the office and developing a digital collection of materials that people could get to through the Internet. Next thing I did was sit down and write to all the foundations that had given money to start up PA programs throughout the country, feeling that they would be very interested in supporting the idea of collecting the history and preserving the history. Only one of those foundations asked me to put forth a full proposal. All six turned me down. And that was very disappointing because I figured half the money that we would need for the first 3 years would be foundational support. So now we didn't look like we were going to get that major foundation's support. I knew that the web site was going to be the way that we were going to sell this to people. So I got a grant from the Trent Foundation at Duke to develop a prototype website. I think we call it the Illustrated History website of the PA profession, something like that. And the people over in the audiovisual department at the medical center were very good. They bent over backwards to do this on a shoestring. And lo and behold, by the time we went to our first advisory committee meeting, we had a website up and running. It wasn't much, but at least it introduced people to the concept. We had this Anaheim meeting coming up of the Academy, and that's where we wanted to really open up to people and let them know that we were going to establish the office and we were off and running. I invited Jeff to attend because he was the archivist at the Academy, and then we had representatives from the PA foundations, from the Academy, from the National Commission. I asked Jim Gifford, who was the archivist at Duke, and Gene Sneller, who was a medical sociologist, to join the advisory group. They weren't able to attend, but the rest of the people, and we met as an advisory board to the PA History Office in Anaheim, California. And that's basically the way we got organized and got off and running.
So, Jeff, you had mentioned this a little bit earlier, but you were one of the first people outside of Duke that Reg had asked for advice about establishing this, you know, national office to gather information and, you know, present it in the electronic space. So what was your immediate reaction to this idea, and what concerns did you have at the time?
I obviously love the idea and look forward to the opportunity to be able to work with Reg. Of course, our number one concern was money. And although Reg has done a wonderful job in raising money, we still needed more to make it all work. It was around 1999 that Reg and I started to talk again about the PA archives once I had settled into George Washington University. As you know, I was still serving as the AAPA archivist and really liked his idea of digitalizing the collection. So in 2000, we decided that we would find a halfway point between Durham and Washington, D.C., and that was Richmond, Virginia. And we started to meet at the VA hospital in Richmond. And over time, thinking about all of the different ways that we could do this, this is where the idea of the society was created. At one of the meetings following our idea of creating the society, Reg had a friend and fellow churchgoer, a lawyer, who was willing to come up and donate his time and put things together so we could get incorporated in the state of North Carolina. And as you know, this all happened in January of 2002.
All right. So, Reg, you had asked Jeff to chair a national advisory board for the PA History Office, and obviously you were interested in working with him since he was one of the first people you did contact outside of Duke. So why Jeff is my question.
Well, Jeff and I have gone back a long time, and I knew him quite well. And being the archivist for the Academy, we had talked a good deal about the problems he had run into there. I was aware that he was collecting materials from past presidents. And so it was just a mutual interest, and I think one of appreciation of each other's talents. Jeff was in a new role of program director. I was moving into the ability to do this, so everything just seemed to fit at that time. I guess if I had any concern, as Jeff mentioned, with the Burn Association, they had worked directly with the National Library of Medicine to archive their materials there. I was concerned about that. I had visited the National Library of Medicine, and I knew that once the government, you gave that to the government, then the responsibilities were theirs to do finding aids and make that available online and so forth. And I just felt like that we needed to maintain control of our own materials so that in the future researchers could get to those materials easily. And also the fact that we were going to digitize a lot of that meant that we had to have them on site to be able to digitize and put those materials up on the website. As Jeff said, the major concern was funding, and he and I spent a lot of time thinking about funding. Jeff recalls, I think the first time we introduced this, Jeff, to the leadership of the Academy, we did the Wanna Be a Millionaire game show at one of their leadership conferences where we basically played PA history trivia and set that up. And we had a lot of fun doing that. And I think that's what sold the Academy on the proposal that we later sent to them asking for funds. So we tried a lot of different ideas on getting our organizations involved in funding. Yeah, Jim Lippman was the attorney that met with us in Richmond, and Jim was a corporate attorney. He didn't charge us anything, but he worked us through, one, getting incorporated in North Carolina, and number two, getting our tax status set up with the federal government. So he came in and helped us do that. Jeff had already written or been part of writing the bylaws for the Burn Association. And as I recall, Jeff, didn't we use those bylaws as kind of our guide for the bylaws for the society, if I recall?
Sure, it was our template.
Yeah, yeah. So we had all that going for us. So by January of 2001, we were incorporated and working on our tax status, and was able then to go to our next meeting, I believe, was in Boston, where we actually had our first meeting of the board under the wing of the society. It was two things going on at that time. One was setting up the society, and the other one was maintaining the PA History Office, which became a PA History Center. And at that time, most of the dollars that were flowing in were going to the PA History Center, not to the society. So the society dollars originally were membership dollars. So we were out there getting individual members to join up. And in Boston, I think we had over 100 and some people join at that meeting. And then we were sending out letters to people. So the society was trying to grow in membership with the idea that eventually it would take over responsibility for the archiving and for what the office was doing as we moved that away from Duke and made that more a national organization. So for about two or three years, we had two books, sets of books going, one for the PA History Office and then one for the society.
All right.
Interesting times. But as Jeff said, luckily he was in Washington, I was in Durham, and Richmond was almost halfway, and we had a good site to meet at. So we probably met at least three times a year, and then, of course, on the telephone.
Okay. So Jeff, obviously you accepted Reg's proposal for the position, and you've also mentioned that you had similar interests and you were also thrilled to be working with Reg, but were there any other reasons that, you know, that drove you to accept the position?
Well, first of all, the advisory board was formed in 2001, so it predated the society, which came into being in January of 2002. It was just a natural transition with Reg and I working together, especially meeting on a regular basis in Richmond to discuss the history project. Duke was very generous with their support as we moved forward, and Reg was every bit as generous with his time. The board itself was really all about working together to identify strategies to present the historical collection through various publications in the Internet, making it readily available to all who wish to really work with it and view it. At the time, in 2001, we had a collaborative effort, really, between Duke, the American Academy of PAs, the Association of PA Programs, and the National Commission. So we were really starting to get out of the starting gates, but still had a lot of work to do.
Definitely. So for both of you, what was the first order of business as far as the advisory board? Who did you ask to join, and why?
The first order of business was, should we establish the society or not? And what we did is we invited in folks who had a proven track record as leaders in the profession and who were currently either on the sidelines or at least not in a major leadership role. And that included people like Ron Nelson, Ruth Ballwig, Glenn Combs, Elaine Grant, Bill Stanhope, Justine Strand, and several others. And as we approached them, most agreed to participate. It was a good group. Reg?
Yeah, we did try to be very have a diverse group of individuals that had had leadership roles in these various organizations and were well known, and I think that was good because they gave us a lot of wisdom and insight just because of their experience. Once we decided to go the society route, which at first I worried a little bit about because I was afraid that the society might take a lot of time and energy, membership, just keeping a membership going, and that might distract from the work of archiving and digitizing and the website. But Jeff looked at this in the long term, and he realized the other thing is that there were a lot of people out there that would want to support this, and he felt that gaining ownership, these individuals gaining ownership, was going to be very important to us in the future. And in retrospect, I see the wisdom of that. As we said, we got into the fundraising. We knew the foundations weren't going to give us a lot of money. So, gosh, we tried all kind of things. I think we were at one association meeting, and we decided off the cuff just to raise money there. And it was an unorganized campaign or something. We raised, a couple thousand dollars just on the cuff. We did get the support of the organization. They gave us a booth, a place to be, to talk about the PA history office and the society and get people to join up. So they gave us some in-kind service there. I did go to the North Carolina Academy, and they gave us $15,000 after I gave them a proposal, and also said that they would basically do a campaign among the other academy organizations or constituent chapters, and also would put forth a resolution in the House of Delegates supporting the establishment of the Society for Preservation of PA History. And all that came about in the first year as well. So a lot of our time and attention was really on how can we fund this, how can we get people to join us, and it was fun. I mean, we had a great deal of fun being at the booth, meeting people, handing out flyers, getting people to join up, members, and we had a good board. And We divided up people. We had committees, and we put one person over research. I believe Carl Fasser. I think Ruth was, Bywig was over strategic planning. We had Glenn Combs looking at the financial side of things. So we had people, and we gave them tasks and assignments, and off and running.
Definitely. So that kind of leads into another question of mine, is how you sold the idea or the concept of having a national PA history office to the leadership of the PA profession.
Well, Reg and I were both pretty well connected with the past and present leadership of the PA profession. That was helpful to us in making individual contacts that, again, were very important. Of course, we did the conferences. Reg alluded to the leadership summit that we did a presentation at and had a lot of fun. We also did a presentation at the Association of PA Programs and provided them with a historical overview of the profession. As Reg has talked about, we've done exhibit halls, started the website. Gaining support was not a sprint, it was a marathon. It really took a substantial amount of time and a number of meetings to bring the leadership over to our side. And as one person said, history is a difficult product to sell.
Yeah.
And for sure it is.
Well, about the only thing we had to sell at that time was we want to preserve this. I mean, we weren't at the point of doing a great deal of research or presenting the information. We just wanted to make sure that steps were being taken to preserve the materials. And actually, we got up and running, and we finally got enough money to hire an archivist. One of the first things that we did was send out letters to all the PA program's constituent chapters asking them if they had materials, if they had kept their original documents and minutes and newsletters and all those things that go with an organization. And to be honest about it, a lot of those organizations and programs had lost their materials. They had not archived or kept them. And we were getting there. We made sure the Academy, the Association, and the National Commission had kept their papers, but some of the programs and some of the constituent chapter organizations had not done a very good job in preserving their historical documents. So I think, again, this convinced us that it was important to develop this national strategy and start working with people to make sure that the primary source documents were going to be there.
Okay. So what were the outcomes of the first one or two meetings of the board?
I'm going to defer to Reg on this one, as I do not have copies of the minutes. My recollections are minimal.
Well, I think the major thing that came out of that was first deciding that we were going to set up a society and how we were going to do that. Jeff and I were asked then to pull together the bylaws for the advisory board to adopt. And as we said, we did that in Richmond with our lawyer friend. And then once we decided to incorporate, then we set up a bank account. I became the executive director, and Jeff became the first president, since he was the chair of the advisory committee. That was kind of a natural, and the people on the board just basically became the first members of the board for the society. And as I said, that was two separate entities for a while until eventually I stepped down, and then the society took over the work of the PA History Office, that time called a PA History Center. So a lot of the work in the early days. The other thing we concentrated on was getting the collection digitized, and that's and we'll talk about that in a little bit, but the LISTA grant that helped us take the materials at Duke and some of the materials that we had collected for the PA History Office and get those digitized and up online through the Duke University Medical Center archives. I remember Jeff coming down soon after we got started, and I had been going through the archives. And, Jeff, you remember the letter from Dr. Stead?
I absolutely
the
did.
Copy, and I remember handing that letter to Jeff, and tears swelled up in his eyes. He was, he said, "Do you know what we have here?" And I said, "Yeah, the copy of the letter that Dr. Stead wrote to the administration saying, I'm thinking about starting a PA program at Duke." And it was written in 64, well, about a year before the actual program got off the ground and running. But
with a mimeographed copy.
Yeah, but the fact that we had primary source material, correspondence from Dr. Stead establishing the first formal program, that was it. That's what we wanted to do. We wanted to make sure we had that primary source material, and it was in our hands. And I think both of us looked at each other and said, yeah, this is worth doing. This is what it's all about. Now we know where it's at. Now we can digitize it. We can let everybody see this letter that started it all, you know, made this profession what it is. So things like that just kept happening over and over, and I think it just urged us or encouraged us to continue what we were doing.
Okay. So Jeff drafted the bylaws for the society, and you both met in Richmond to, you know, iron out the details. And I believe, Reg, you brought along a lawyer friend to help you with the wording and begin plans to incorporate. So what were the main issues you faced with that phase of the society?
I think for me, the issue was the name. I wanted just to call it the PA History Society, and Jeff wanted to put the word preservation in there. And I remember we went around and around a little bit about that, because I thought we would do more than just preserve. Eventually we would start presenting, and we'd start doing research into the history of the profession and so forth. But we stuck with the word preservation. But other than that, I think things went. I don't think we had many other issues. Do you recall any, Jeff?
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's hard to believe we had a disagreement, Reg. I think the really important thing at that time was really carefully reviewing the bylaws in great detail to make certain everything was in place, especially before we proceeded with the incorporation process in North Carolina. And it was really very kind of your church friend and lawyer to give so much to the society to get us off the ground, both in terms of the incorporation and the 501c3. So we have to be thankful for that support.
Yeah.
Okay, so why don't we talk a little bit more about the LISTA grant that you were talking about, and the impact that had on putting the office together. Did the grant impact your vision about, you know, where the society and the office were going or should go?
Yeah, I was convinced, Jeff and I were convinced at that time, just having, gathering all these papers and documents and having them sit in an archive just wasn't taking advantage of the technology of the time. The internet was up. People were beginning to digitize things out of archives or out of museums and putting those up as virtual displays. And we both felt that that having a virtual archive or having access to these documents would be important. And there was a group that was doing this in physics, the American Association of Physics, and they had a website, and they were putting a lot of photographs and a lot of materials online. And I really thought that was the way we should go. So just luckily, about that same time, the federal government was giving each state library system money to capture cultural history, as they called it. And this was really to digitize photographs and materials on the local level of historic importance. I talked to our librarian, Pat Thabodeau, and she agreed that the PA profession originating there at Duke in North Carolina, and also having a program at Wake Forest, we could sell that as cultural history. So we put together a LISTA grant I think it was for $45,000 or $50,000, something in that neighborhood, to go through the Duke collection and some of the materials that we had pulled in through the PA History Office and select those and digitize them. I knew nothing about that. I didn't know anything about metadata and MARC records and all the things that you had to do to go along with. I just thought you scan things and put it up on the web. I didn't realize you had to put all the information that went with it. So we got we actually won the grant. The money came into the library, but it was a joint project with the PA History Center and Duke. And we selected out, or I went through and selected out about 400 documents, which ended up being 3,000-plus images. And we worked with the library. The reference people in the library did the MARC records. We did the metadata. We hired a guy by the name of Tom Clark, who managed the whole process for us. We hired students to actually do the imaging, and he would look at the quality of the images. And lo and behold, within a year, we had all this up on a website that we linked to out of our PA History website. So that was our major grant that got a lot of material up that we could access. And that then we could point to. We could say, look, we've done this with the Duke collection. Let's go over now and get the Medics collection. Let's go over and get other collections. Let's go through and pull out important documents, primary source material, photographs, videos, and what have you, and let's start to making sure that we can get them up on the Internet. So, yeah, the list of grant was very timely, and it allowed us to do a lot that then we could use and the point to. And, you know, when you're out there asking people for funds, you need to say this is what we achieved, and that was a biggie. We could say, look, this is what we've been able to achieve, and if we have a full-time archivist like Tom Clark, who's helped us with this project, look at how much more we could do. So I think when we got through, we had also, Tom helped us get some biographies up. I think we did 13 or so video clips that we put up online, and we wrote 4 new exhibits or articles that went up on the website. So at the end of that grant, we had achieved a lot and were able to point to a lot of success.
Okay. So the society becomes first established. Jeff, you become the society's first president. You have no assets. The PA History Office is going into its second year of operation, and Reg is planning to retire from Duke in June of 2004. Plans are for the society to take over the financial responsibility for the PA History Project, the administration of the society, and the support of the PA History Center's academic mission. So with all of this, what is going on in your mind?
And there's no good news there. I mean, clearly, I'm thinking about the fact that Reg is retiring, and can we keep this all going without the support of Duke and a few others? Truly, if it wasn't for the support of Duke University and the hard work of Reg Carter, we would have been dead in the water long before this. Of course, we have to acknowledge the support we received from the American Academy, the Association of PA Programs, and the Commission in 2001. But if you think about 2002, when we went to our first annual conference in Boston and had a complimentary booth in the exhibit hall, we did attract and sign up 125 founding members, which allowed us to raise about somewhere between $8,000 and $9,000. But clearly, we needed to get out and drum up some financial support. We did do just that, but with limited success. And again, history is a tough product to sell.
Hmm. Okay. So, Reg,
yeah.
Sorry, were you going to say something?
No, go ahead.
So, can you talk a little bit about the evolution from, you know, that beginning, that infancy of the society, from the PA office into the PA History Center?
Yeah, we started out as an office, and then I talked to the chancellor at Duke and told him what we were doing. And I felt that PA History Office Duke, that just wasn't going to sell. And I knew that Centers carried with it this connotation of something really big and exciting. So, and also it would place other people within the system saying they needed to support a center. So the chancellor said, you don't want to be in office anymore. You don't want to just be tied to the Department of Community Health Sciences. I'm going to make you a center. So he waved his little wand, and all of a sudden we were the PA History Center. And what that meant was that we had now prominence throughout the whole medical center. But the advisory board, especially I think Ruth from the medic side and Elaine from Yale at that time, knew that we needed to make sure that people understood this was a national movement and the society was national. It was not just Duke. And that they also, like Jeff realized, was that Duke would only provide the opportunity to begin this, but to sustain it, it was going to have to find its own source and its own home. So one of the things we wanted to do was move out of the department. The center helped us do that. We also wanted to highlight that we now was a center, part of the library and the archives, rather than the Department of Community Health Sciences. The opportunity to move out of Duke proper came when the North Carolina Academy of Physician Assistants decided they were going to build their own building out in the Research Triangle. And I knew the leadership of the academy quite well, and when they were building the building, I said something to I believe it was Paul Hendricks at that time, who was treasurer and was part of the planning of the building, and I said it would be great if we could build into the Stead Center a museum that we could put a lot of Dr. Stead's personal items. For example, his office up at the lake, wouldn't it be great if we could put that into the center? And we just started talking about the kinds of things that we could display in the new building. And lo and behold, Paul walks in one day with the blueprint plans, and he says, here's where the museum office is going to be. Here's a reading room. Here's an office. And he had already written on the office PA History Society. And he says, if you guys can raise the money, we would love for you to move out here and have your office, the society headquartered here within the Stead Center. I took that back to Jeff and the group. I believe Ron Nelson had now become president of the group, and you were past president, Jeff. But anyhow, it was basically this. Reg, if you can raise the money to pay the rent and get your equipment and so forth, you can move out there. In fact, we would encourage you to move out there, and we will support that through a resolution. So that's the way that came about. Now, my concern was, well, how am I going to raise the money to pay the rent? So I got on the telephone to a close friend, John McElligott, who was had graduated from Duke but had gone on to medical school and now was in occupational medicine up in Tennessee. And I called John basically to get some advice about whether he thought pioneering PAs might be in a position to raise money to support the rent. And John said, well, it's interesting you call me. I've just set up the Blue Devil Fund, trust fund, and I'm trying to think of what to provide money for and how much money is your rent going to be. And I think it was like $20,000 or something per year. It was a low cost. And John said, I'll write you in for 3 years. I'll pay all your rent for you to move out to the Stead Center. Then I was going to go to the department and say, can I take my desk and my printers and my computers and all those things? Would you just donate those or let me take them out to the Stead Center? And they were willing to do that. But at the same time, I got a call from a friend who wanted some of those Just Say For Me books, the Steadism book for his residence in Greensboro. And I said, yeah, I've got them, and we have reprinted them. And so I said, how many do you want? And he said, well, send me about 40 of them. So I sent them to him. He called me back, and he said, how much money do I owe you? And I said, you know, at Duke, we don't do things on money. You needed them. I had them. They're yours. And he said, what are you doing? Tell me more about this PA history thing. And I told him, you know, that we were honoring Dr. Stead, but other founders of the PA history. And he said, I have a friend that, you know, might contribute to that. So I get a telephone call in a couple of days, and he said, my friend's sitting here in the office. Who do we write the check to? And I told him to the Society PA History and whatever. And lo and behold, the friend turned out to be Stanley Tanger of Tanger Outlets. And he wrote us a check for $10,500 to buy the equipment to go in the office. A couple other PAs, Ed Wise, gave us money to set up the archive room. And Prentice Harris, the first African-American graduate PA from Duke, gave us money to set up the reading room. So all of a sudden, we had all this money to move out there, pay the rent for 3 years, and have equipment and have money. Other people contributed money, like Ron Nelson, to get some displays put up. The Oklahoma Academy sent us money for display cabinets. Later, Don Peterson worked with the Veterans Caucus to raise monies to put another statue and a memorial garden out at the Stead Center. It was just every time we needed money, all of a sudden it was just there, and I can't believe it. But within 6 months, we were out of Duke and into a brand-new office setting. We're able to display a lot of museum items and make the Stead Center kind of our showcase for the PA History Society.
So why was it important that responsibility for the PA History Center be transferred from Duke to the Society?
Jeff, I think we all felt that as long as it was at Duke, that people would think it was a Duke project, and we wanted people to very quickly understand, no, this is not for Duke. This is for us preserving nationally, and we wanted to do that at the national level and at the regional level. And so part of our strategy was to start working with programs and constituent chapters, other specialty organizations, to make sure they were preserving their history, teach them how to do that. So once the Academy came in and gave us a three-year contract that basically paid for us to hire a full-time archivist who was employed at Duke, worked out of the Duke University Medical Center archives, but was 100% paid for by us, that individual then started really working. And we had some workshops we held at the national meetings to teach people about record management and archiving processes. We encourage them to get in touch with their local archivist and start saving their materials. And then anyone else, like individuals who did not have a place to put their personal papers, we encourage them to give them to us. First thing I did with the archivists, we traveled to the National Commission, the Association of PA Programs, to the Academy, and we saw all the materials that Kevin and Jeff had accumulated down in a storage room, and the PAEA, or the Association, at that time the Association of PA Program, they had all their boxes, but they were out in a old warehouse, covered over with plastic dust. There was, I remember there was a tractor and gasoline stored in the same building. And we just pulled all those boxes, brought them back down to the Stead Center or to the archives at Duke, and processed all the association's materials, wrote finding aids for it, and then hauled all that back up for them to maintain in an environmentally safe place. So we were off and running by 2004. Then we had a full-time archivist. The society had taken over total responsibility. We were headquartered at the Stead Center. We had, as I said, display cases. We had the Stead Office Museum. We had the gardens with the Lifesavers then, Caregivers Now statue. And I think at that time we were approaching 70 programs and constituent chapters as members of the association, and I forget what our membership was, but it was well up over 200 or 300 individuals by that time.
All right. So the Stead Center at this time is being built by the North Carolina Academy, and the how did the invitation to relocate the society there, how did that come about? And, you know, what were the would-be benefits and the concerns of that?
Well, I think I've just said that basically I knew the people out there, and when they were talking about building the office, we talked about putting in a Stead Museum or some room that would honor him. And then as we just gradually talked about this, I brought that information back to Jeff, and we started talking about the possibility of moving our headquarters out there. And Paul Hendricks and the leadership on that side of the North Carolina Academy, they saw the benefits of that. And all of a sudden, we had signed the papers, and the only thing we had to do was come up with the money. And I told you how that happened. So the benefit was it got us out from under the Duke umbrella. We still had our ties with the Duke University Medical Center archives, with the archivists being based there. But now we had an office for the and a telephone number and everything for the society. So I was the executive director, the historian of the society. We were keeping our own books, and all the money now was flowing into the society and then being contracted out to Duke. So that meant that we had now a national prominence in the sense that we no longer were under Duke.
Okay.
Yeah, Jeff, Reggie gets all the credit for this transition period, and I tip my hat to him. He did a phenomenal job, and you can see how passionate he is about everything that happened.
All right. Well, Jeff, how about during your leadership and involvement with the PA History Project, you know, what brought you the greatest satisfaction, and is there anything you would do differently?
Well, the absolute greatest satisfaction came from knowing the history was being preserved in a secure location, and the collection was being digitalized and was readily available to all who wished to view it. What would I do differently? It might have been wiser for us to seek more money from foundations and grants, have money in the bank before we started. But nevertheless, the History Project evolved quite nicely from the ideas that were generated in a small conference room at the VA hospital in Richmond to where it is today. My involvement in the History Project was getting the idea off the ground with the AAPA, starting the society with Reg, serving as the first president and immediate past president, and then serving as a member of the Strategic Planning Committee. My involvement with the History Project really ended with my retirement from George Washington University in 2007.
Okay. All right, Reg, same question.
Well, Jeff was very vital. He knew a lot of people. I think selling the proposal to the Academy, getting them on board early, and they did become our main organization that supported us during that time. We did go up and meet with Steve Crane, who was the executive director of the Academy, and basically, I think during all that time, Steve at first was somewhat reluctant, but I believe we planted the seed, and within a couple years, Steve was back knocking on our door. I believe once he saw we were succeeding, then and people were interested in preserving the history. So now Jeff is retiring. I'm getting ready to step down from my position. So the big question is, do we leave the society headquartered there at in North Carolina, where it's incorporated at the Stead Center, or do we move it to some other locale, keeping the archives part of the society at the Duke proper within the? Because I felt strongly at that time that we needed to have the archives in an archive, our archives within an archive, and I thought the arrangement with Duke was working out quite well. But we both knew that we needed to think about that. So what happened, we had a meeting, I believe it was in Quebec, Canada, where we met, and Steve and Mary Ettery was there, was president at the time, and that's when we decided to have the administrative part of the society be taken over by the American Academy of Physician Assistants, with Kevin being named, Bates being named as the managing director of the society. So when we stepped down, my last duties in, was that 2007? I can't, 2008. We shifted all the administrative responsibilities up to the academy. And then I retired out and basically was away from the workings of the society for about 3 years before it then moved back down to Georgia to the National Commission, becoming a supporting organization of the National Commission.
Yeah, the society was going to become an arm of the academy, similar to the PA Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Quebec meeting was in 2006, if I remember.
Yeah, and it seemed like we got everything together and started transitioning, and that we needed to do. And the other thing we thought positive about that was that, okay, now we moved from Duke, we moved to the Stead Center in North Carolina, which was a chapter of the American Academy. Now we're moving up under the American Academy, and we'll get a lot more exposure and visibility under the Academy. So it all seemed like a natural way for the organization to move, especially since Jeff and I were basically retiring out of the profession, we thought, at that time.
Mm-hmm. Well, now that we've made it this far, what's your vision for both of you, for the society's future, and what do you think will ensure its survival as we move into the new world?
I think establishing the archives in the late 90s and early 2000s really allowed us to capture a fair portion of the early history while those pioneers of the profession were still alive, to share their thoughts and memories. Continue to preserve the history of the profession in a timely fashion so it can be shared with future generations is of the utmost importance and priority number one in my mind for the future. I'm thrilled that the Society has been supported by the NCCPA since May of 2011, and their continued support will certainly be advantageous to the survival of the Society.
Okay. Reg, your thoughts?
I think the same thing. We've, as you can tell from this interview with us, that funding was always a major thing. It took a lot of time. We wrote a lot of proposals. We did get outside grants and funding. We did a lot, but having a basic staff, I know that our contracts always ran 3 years, so keeping an archivist beyond 3 years was hard because we all in that last year, you never knew if you were going to be funded and have money for that full-time position. What we need to get to is make a decision that the basic staffing, staff that we need in the society is there, that we don't have to worry about going out and getting funds for our basic staff support. Then all the projects and other things we do, yes, we go out and get soft money, or we do that through membership with PA programs and constituent chapters. And I'm getting the sense that the National Commission is moving that direction. I would like to see us have a full-time archivist. I'd like to work an arrangement with another archive, whether it's at Emory or somewhere else, to make sure that our materials, once we digitize them and we have all this in our database, then that can go off and just be stored in an archive somewhere. But we do need to get back to a full-time manager, executive director, manager-type person, a full-time archivist, and, of course, people are going to have to wear different hats, but we need a stable staff of two or three full-time, at least three full-time equivalents. So once we have that and we're assured of that, we don't have to worry about that, then the society can really start concentrating on the job of preserving, presenting our history and doing the things. And I'm very proud of where we've come in the last 3 years. Jeff, we just finished those educational learning modules that we talked about for many, many years, and they're very good. So now we have these five learning modules that will go out to all the PA students to learn their history. So we're making great strides under the support of the National Commission. We just need to get everybody else back on board. We need to get the Academy, the Association of PA Programs. If everybody chips in, then it won't cost anyone a lot of money, but it will what everybody contributes will go a long way. So I'm very excited about the future and the direction we're going. I just see so much work to be done. And also we need to start concentrating on the 1980s, the 1990s, and 2000s to make sure that we're getting that history and have the primary source material and the oral history interviews that we need from that generation as well.
Okay, so as we're closing up here, are there any last thoughts or people that need to be mentioned?
I would like to thank my good friend and Yale colleague, Bruce McChandler, for getting us out of the starting gates in 1996.
Right.
I would also like to thank President Lynn Cagey for having the vision to start the History Project during his administration. I have great admiration for my good friend Reg Carter and his passion for the project. This History Project and Society are alive and well today in large part because of Reg Carter from Duke University. Thanks, Reg.
You're welcome, Jeff, and I appreciate all the time and effort you put in those early days of getting us up and running and strategic planning and smoothing feathers when they needed to be smoothed. It was a great team effort, and you know, I'm very proud of what we did at Duke and being the PA program director there, but I think when it's all said and done, probably the greatest pride that I'm going to have in my professional career with PAs is being able to co-found this PA History Society with Jeff. It's not often that you're able to start up an organization, especially one that's important to a profession that that you really love and has given so much to you. So this was not hard to do, Jeff. This was this has been enjoyable. I have been so enriched. I have learned so much from the historians and the archivists and the other people I've worked with, and it's almost like having a second career and being able to still do this is just so rewarding. And it's just that little feeling of giving back to a profession that has meant so much to me and my family over the years.